you have a visit.
I had a visit.
Oh. You hear that, Sheriff?
It was very pleasant. The officer was quite nice as he pulled me over. So.
Well, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come visit with us.
Well, listen, I appreciate the opportunity to come and chat with you and hear from you about sort of what's happening here. I'd be happy to proceed however you all would like. Maybe give you a bit of an update in terms of where I see things from Washington, what we're doing, and then talk about some of the more specific issues that we need to work on together.
Yeah, that would be a great direction to go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. So it's been now just about 3 months with the new administration and the new Congress in session. And I apologize for my back to everybody.
That's okay.
I'm used to it. And you can really see, as I'm sure you all have experienced, a change in approach, a change in terms of what the role of the federal government should be. And there's really been an effort both at the White House and in Congress and in the agencies across the board to take steps to begin to move the authority back down to the states and the local level. I was really honored, Joel and I were together at the White House when President Trump signed the repeal of BLM Planning 2.0 into law. And that was a very important first step and one of a number of pieces of legislation that we are going through the Congressional Review Act and using the Congressional Review Act, which has been on the books for a very long time, but was only used once before. But this Congress now, we've really begun to use it to undo some of the rules that were put in place at the very end of the last administration. And that has had an impact in the near term. We've used it on things having to do with the energy industry, the coal industry, as well as some of our land use planning issues. We also, I was very pleased to see the President sign, and then I was over at the Department of Interior when Secretary Zinke took the second step in terms of ending the moratorium on coal leases on public lands. And I introduced a piece of legislation that would prohibit any future moratoria without congressional approval, so that we, you know, it's terrific to be in a situation where the administration really wants to do what's right, really wants to begin to stop some of the federal overreach, but we've got to make sure that we don't just see the pendulum swing back again, or do everything we can so we don't see the pendulum swing back again if we get a different administration at some point. We're also working on issues, obviously, wolves. And again, I introduced legislation that, this was before the most recent very positive court decision, but that would instruct Fish and Wildlife to delist, but then also prevent the courts from reviewing that listing in the future. And that's a bipartisan piece of legislation that I hope we'll see move through. You know, we've had sort of across the board, the President has really been focused very much on what he needs to do to help the energy industry, and in particular coal, but I would say fossil fuels generally speaking. And you've seen, I know, with the leaked BLM memo that has been reported in the press, I think you've begun to see a shift in terms of moving back to, you know, a different kind of understanding of multiple use and back to trying to do what the law says we ought to be doing and recognize that, you know, we've got to do everything we can to protect our resources and our land, but that we can't do that at the expense of, you know, folks that are making a living on the land, or our energy industry, or, you know, our ag industry across the board. So that there, and I think you'll continue to see that. There's a big discussion going on this week about whether or not the United States ought to formally pull out of the Paris Climate Accords. I signed a letter yesterday with a number of members of Congress, sponsored by the Western Caucus, to urge the President to walk away from the Paris Climate Deal. There are some who argue he should stay in it just as a way to avoid, I think, a fight that they think is an unnecessary fight. My view is that if we really want to have true change, we've got to get away from viewing carbon dioxide as a pollutant. It's just not, and we shouldn't be regulating it as such. And if we stay in the Paris Climate Accord, it's very difficult to be able to make that case. So that's sort of where we are on a range of issues having to do with energy, land use. Healthcare, obviously, is a big issue. The inability to get that done was extremely frustrating. I think that most of my colleagues, I am confident, are having the same, a similar experience back home over the course of these last couple of weeks, trying to explain to people, you know, why it was that a small handful of folks was able to derail that piece of legislation. At the same time, even though the Congress has been in recess, there have been conversations that have continued to go on that are really aimed at trying to get together a piece of legislation that can get the support of people across the spectrum on the Republican side of the House. And I think that's very important, because I think if we don't do that, President Trump, you know, he wants to get health care reform. And if he looks at the Republican conference and says, you guys can't do it for me, then he's going to reach over and do it with the Democrats. I'm not against working across the aisle, except that that means that the product will not be as conservative as I think it needs to be. So I think we've made progress. We absolutely have got to get it done. We've got to get it done because the system's collapsing, you know, it's not as though we can just maintain Obamacare, as you all know, and people will be in a situation where they can continue to get coverage. The costs have skyrocketed, and the system itself is just collapsing under its own weight. So we've got to get it repealed. And we need to do it quickly. And the timing is going to be complicated here, because as soon as we get back to Washington, we're going to be dealing with the fact that the continuing resolution runs out at the end of April. And so we will be immediately faced with what are we going to do to fund the government, and what are we going to do to keep the government moving, and what is that going to mean in terms of, you know, Obamacare repeal, and what is that going to mean for tax reform. So these issues are all going to be coming up very quickly. I'm hopeful about the conversations that have been going on over the recess that we will be in a position where we get movement on Obamacare repeal or replace. SRS and PILT, we've talked about those at length, and I think that the commitment is, particularly for PILT, that the next appropriation will make folks whole, that the CR didn't do that, and that when we go through this next appropriations, whether it's an omnibus or another CR, I'm sure you've heard this from the Interior Department as well, that they're very focused on working to make sure that we don't just get it funded, but that there's retroactive funding in there for the levels that weren't as high as they were supposed to be in the CR. The issue with SRS is obviously we're working hard on it. People are committed to trying to get that done. I think the challenge there is the issue of finding offsets. And so we're working with House leadership and on the Natural Resources Committee to identify offsets for the SRS funding. This all comes down to the budget process as a whole. And one of the things that I'm learning as a brand new member of Congress is just, you know, how unbelievably screwed up the budget process is. And we're in a situation today, and I'll close with this and then be happy to take questions. The place that has been hurt the most by the current system in terms of where we are federally on the budget is the Defense Department. And even though I've spent a lot of time over the course of my career working on national security issues, my service on the Armed Services Committee and the work that we've been doing there has made very clear to me that the situation is far, far worse than I understood it to be even when I was sworn into Congress. And what's happened is, really, because the combination of Congress not doing its job, you know, back in 2011, instead of coming to an agreement on a budget going forward, Congress said, well, if we can't agree, we'll have these horrific cuts that are going to take effect. And I think they thought the cuts were so horrific that they would be forced to agree, but of course they didn't agree. And so we've been living now for 6 years with these arbitrary across-the-board cuts. 50% come out of the Defense Department and 50% come out of domestic spending, intended to reduce the debt, which, of course, they haven't done. The debt's continued to grow. But what it has done is absolutely hobble our military. And at the same time that our military is facing a crisis in readiness, it's facing a crisis in terms of being able to fulfill our national security strategy, our adversaries have been advancing and making advances in technology that really threaten our ability to continue to be the premier military force in the world and threaten our security. And so you will see, as we get into these budget discussions and debates over the course of the next month, there'll be a debate about whether we should do a continuing resolution that includes the military in addition to all of the other programs that have to get funded. And every Republican now on the Armed Services Committee in the House, including myself, have said we won't support a continuing resolution for the Defense Department because a continuing resolution will hobble them even more. It, what it does is forces them to stay at the exact level of funding that they've been at, doesn't allow them to do the kind of investment that's necessary to begin to rebuild the forces, and doesn't allow them to invest in new projects and new programs. So that'll be a big part of the discussion coming up as well. But that's basically the overview. There's certainly a lot more going on that I'd be happy to talk about it and love to hear from you all in terms of priorities here and how I could be most effective in representing you in Washington.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate that. You covered everything I was going to ask about. But I know Joel has some thoughts, and perhaps let's go in that direction.
Okay, well, first, Liz, I want to thank you again for your role in shepherding Planning 2.0 repeal through the House.
Well, and thank you.
That was important to local governments throughout the West. In follow-up to that, I did have the opportunity to meet with one of the now Deputy Undersecretary, Catherine, I forgot her last name.
Interior?
Yeah, she came from the House Resource Committee. I know you know her.
Okay.
Anyway, what we want to do is we recognize there's still a tremendous need to improve the planning process. It started for a reason. It was just a top-down approach, and it didn't work. We started out trying to make it work. We discovered we couldn't make it work. Then we started the process of opposing it through WIR and NACO, mm-hmm. and that led to the repeal, which needed to happen. But where do we go from here?
Yeah.
What counties are promoting is that we start over at the local level, working with our governors in each state and with the state BLM office and the multiple users of our resource, mm-hmm. and figure out what isn't working, define what isn't working, and then figure out how to fix it. And that's what we want to do. It isn't that we don't recognize the need to improve it. Enough said about that. One thing to add to the SRS and PILT discussion. The way the formula works for SRS and PILT, if SRS is not funded, the counties that no longer receive SRS funding then qualify for more percentage of PILT funding. So what that does is it further dilutes the PILT funding, mm-hmm. to where counties that are really dependent on PILT, and in Wyoming, I'd have to say, although a lot of us get SRS, our county, Sublette County, gets SRS funding. We use our share of that funding to fund our search and rescue helicopter. So it's important that we be able to do that. In terms of offsets, the best offset that can occur to help resolve that is active force management and get back to cutting trees and cleaning up, improving the health of our force, and that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And so our message from counties is, let's not just eliminate SRS, but let's continue to use it as bridge funding and provide some incentives to the Forest Service to get back to active management. The counties in Oregon, for example, if they were back in a scenario where they were managing in a way that allowed them to go forward, not to run out of timber, but to do it in a sustainable way, their SRS funding could help offset the needed SRS funding to counties like us that even the 25% of active management would not begin to give us the funding that we get through SRS today, where 25% of that funding in Oregon is far more than what they get in SRS funding. It would help our counties to have that as a means to bridge the gap. But that takes time.
Do you see, Joel, a similar sort of process possible or underway with the Forest Service that we were talking about with BLM in terms of, you know, on the BLM side of things, looking at what do we need to do? We got 2.0 repealed, but what do we need to do to really fix things? What are you hearing from the Forest Service in terms of their willingness to do the same sort of look at, you know, their management challenges?
It's really interesting with the Forest Service right now because they're spending 65 to 70% of the Forest Service operating budget is now being diverted to fire suppression. And so as a result of using their money to suppress fires, we're losing the money to pay our range managers and the people in the agency that oversee the multiple use activities going on the forest. So because of that, or partly because of that, the Forest Service is more inclined now to get back to a scenario of healthy forests and active management. We have a forest collaborative in process as we speak in Sublette County. Mm-hmm. And we're looking potentially at an area from all the way from the Hoback Ranch area in Bondurant all the way to the top of Union Pass. Hmm. And we're in the process of analyzing that to see what working with the Forest Service and they're looking to see what the potential is. So we are making some progress, but there is probably that leads into some need to look at the Federal Land Policy and Management Act, FLTMA, to see what changes might be needing to be done there that would help move that along, so to speak. Same way with NEPA. Equal access to justice, that's another barrier. Every time the agency, and that applies to both BLM and Forest Service, every time they get ready to do a record of decision, when we're paying the legal fees for the environmental groups to sue the agency, they just continually file one suit after another.
Right.
And I know I'm not telling you anything you don't already know.
No, it's,
but Karen Budd has been instrumental in Wyoming and providing some thoughtful solutions to maybe move forward on that. So those are all things that enter into the picture to make things happen. And I was asked, in addition, to bring up and stress the need to continue the delisting of the wolf as a congressional action, and not just rely on the court process to address that.
Yep.
So
and
that
I think
pretty well covers CO2. You mentioned CO2. We have a company here in Sublette County that goal is to produce CO2, put it in a pipeline. It'll go to the Natrona hub and clear north into Montana to use for enhanced oil recovery. Mm-hmm. And it's a valuable resource in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some feedback this morning at our breakfast meeting from Denbury. They're the company that they are a CO2 company, and that's their expertise. Helium is a byproduct of the gas stream, and we have potential here in the county to market a major amount of helium, which is a benefit to our national security, really.
Yep.
So we've got some positive things going here. We just need to be able to get through the federal agency process to move forward and actually make them work.
Well, and I think it'll be helpful once we have a permanent, BLM director, once we have Secretary of Agriculture sworn in, once we're in a position where we've got more of these staff jobs, and both at the secretary level and below filled. I mean, I know when you've been back there, it's tough, when you can't find the right person to go sit down and talk to.
Well, and after in Planning 2.0, that's what we're waiting for, is to get the right people in place. I know Secretary Zinke has the right thought process of what needs to happen, but until we have a BLM director, it's hard to make anything happen. So
that's right.
If I can tag on to that also, Joel, part of the forest management issue is private industry's ability to be able to utilize that wood, that timber, and also make it financially profitable for them. They're not going to come in and do that if they're going to take a hit and it's going to not be financially possible for them to do that. So I don't know what type of help we can get with private industry, sawmills, pulp mills, whatever, things like that, that can facilitate the maintenance management of forest.
I think, a big part of that is getting some reliability and consistency in the regulation. So somebody's going to make the investment from the private side, they'll know we can count on, we're not going to all of a sudden get the rug pulled out from under us if, folks decide suddenly, no more logging here. So I think that's part of it. What's the time frame in terms of the sort of pilot project that you mentioned that you're doing here?
We don't have any established deadline on time frame, but we hope within a couple of years that some of the obstacles we face, for example, is the lack of infrastructure in the industry. We have no timber industry left in the county, no sawmills.
Yeah.
We're working with South and Jones in
Evanston.
Closest. Mm-hmm. They're the closest sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically in regards to what Andy mentions, we need to strengthen the language for use of good neighbor authority, for example, where that allows the state to play a bigger role in managing the resource. We need to extend the terms of stewardship contracts. Stewardship contracting is provided for, but the maximum length, if I remember correctly, is like 5 or 10 years. 5 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And in 5 years does not incentivize private industry to put in infrastructure, bring in a sawmill, and invest several $1 million with the idea that 5 years is done.
Yeah.
Right.
They need some long-term stability in the industry, and that's one way of helping do that. Another way is to allow the Forest Service to do long-range plans working with industry to say, we have a sustainable 20-year supply of this, this, and this, and over this length of a period to entice them to make the kind of investment to make our forest healthy again.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably takes some changes to FLTMA to do that.
Is there resistance in the Forest Service, or just sort of nobody knows?
I don't know resistance as much as until now. Nobody's been willing to really follow up on it. Congress, for example, we're going to go forward with SRS payments. Don't worry about active management.
Yeah.
I mean, that happened at the Spotted Owl. That's what started SRS, was they took timber production away from the western states, and the states have relied on it. Counties were going broke because that was 80% of their operating budget in Oregon counties was timber harvest.
Yeah.
Because they got 25% of the revenue.
And I don't know that there's so much a history of resistance as perhaps apathy.
Mm-hmm. And I think it, you know, people look at which way the wind's blowing and see whether it's going to, you know, there may, you know, in the previous administration not have been a lot of incentive for somebody to say, okay, I want to take some initiative here, for example. But I think now, you know, especially getting the
folks.
Well,
maybe in order to get things started, maybe that 25% right now is basically 25% of nothing. Maybe if that was changed to 50%, mm-hmm. maybe that would incentivize support for active management, and it would still mean more money, more revenue to the federal government, as well as more revenue to the states and counties.
Mm-hmm.
I have something to look at anyway.
Okay.
Thank you, Joel. Anything further?
I think that's what I had listed.
Okay.
So
thank you.
Commissioner,
I'd like to hear
Burnett.
From our other commissioners.
I think Joel's pretty much covered it. Representative Cheney, I certainly would like to thank you for your time out of your busy schedule to come hear our concerns. And I also would like to thank you for your leadership and efforts in repealing 2.0. I think things like that may serve to help us in the future. It's encouraging to hear that the current administration is moving forward with the concept of trying to return more authority to local control, where we can partner up and team up with these problems that we're facing. So thank you for your concern and thank you for your presence.
Thank you. Well, thank you for what you're doing and thanks for your involvement. And, you know, there's no way that we would have gotten BLM 2.0 passed and the attention that it got without help from county commissioners. And, you know, being able to say to Speaker Ryan and to Leader McCarthy, look, this is why this matters so much, you know. People who don't have any BLM land in their districts, you know, it was easier for them to understand why it was such a priority because of the involvement of people like you all across the state. So I'm really very grateful for that.
Well, thank you for representing Wyoming.
Well, thank you. It's an honor.
Commissioner Rawhauser.
Going along with what everybody said, you're new on the block, as I'm new on the block, and I'm very impressed with how quickly you hit the floor running and what you've done in
Thank
a very,
you.
Very short period of time. And 2.0, I believe, is just the tip of the iceberg. And for you and other people in Western the United States, just we've been lost.
Yeah.
And now it's time to come back and get some things done because there's a lot of good things happening here. And with people like yourself leading us, I think we'll do just fine.
Well,
so thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. And there's a real sense of hopefulness, I have to say. You know, and even when you have frustrations like having to pull the health care bill, knowing that you know, when I cast my vote on the floor of the House, you know, I'm casting it for legislation that is likely to pass the Senate and, you know, be signed by the President of the United States and will become law. It's not just sort of we're down there having to express our opinion about these things. So I think we do have a real chance here to make the kind of change. And frankly, we in the West, I mean, have been the target. It was a war on us, and particularly a war in the energy industry, but a war on ag, a war on anybody that wanted to have any human use of so much of our land. And so I think we're now in a position where we can begin to stop that and really begin to reverse it. So it's an honor for me to be there.
And you're in the right place at the right time.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
And thank you, Representative Cheney. We appreciate it. One last thing I might ask and talk about, just put on your radar, is the potential liquid natural gas plant at Jardins Cove, Oregon. I guess that once again is being discussed. Huge benefit in the energy industry, but not just the energy industry, but all counties involved and the consumers of liquid natural gas, not just domestic, but also an international market that could be tapped into with that type of a project.
Okay, I'll look into it and see. Is it has it been built or
no?
Is it
still in
just
the
being proposed.
Yeah, just being proposed.
Okay. We were just made aware of it this morning, actually,
okay.
By our energy companies.
Okay, well, I'll look at it and see what else I can find out about it.
Terrific.
For sure, keep our eyes on it.
Appreciate that.
It would enhance the opportunity to export liquid natural gas to China, for example, which, and the discussions that are going on with the administration, that that there could be something important
real potential there.
Happen there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And as we're always looking for other practical sources of gas and uses for good, clean, natural gas.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just one further comment. I would applaud your efforts in working with, I'm not sure what we're calling it now, the Wyoming Natural Resource Coalition. It's the grazing board, the stock growers,
yes,
the energy companies.
Yeah.
I know you've got further meetings going on, and really appreciate your getting feedback from them, because they are our multiple users. So.
Exactly. Now, I think that,
so that's really good that you're doing that.
Yeah. And I think that's where just making sure that, that those folks never lose, as you know, you all never lose, you know, your most important input into the whole process. And, you know, it's stakeholders that at the end of the day matter so much.
That's an honor. Anything further, gentlemen? Representative Cheney, thank you one more time for coming to talk with us. We know you're a very, very busy person. We're going to turn you loose.
I'm going to drive more slowly now.
Turn you loose. Do any of the elected officials who are in attendance here have any questions? Go ahead. Why don't we introduce our elected officials? Roxana Jensen, go ahead. That is our county treasurer. We have the sheriff, Casey Lear, in the back in attendance, our county assessor here, Janice Saxton, IT guy, sitting right next to her. But we thank you very much, and we know you're busy, so we'll turn you loose.
All right, well, nice
right.
to see you. Can we
do
a picture maybe with
yeah,
you guys?
Yeah, let's
okay,
do
all
that.
Right?
Should we go out in front
yeah.
of the table or back here?
That'll work.
Yeah. Do you want to come back with us?
Where should we be?
I think I can.
Come on back with
me
us.
Back here. Okay.
We'll put you in between.
All right. Right here?
Yeah.
There you go.
You
can
move the chairs?
I think we can get you if you come right here. Or that's
good.
That works.
There you go.
That works. Okay.
And I'll grab one more too if you don't mind. One, two.
Sorry.
One, two, three. One, two, three. Thank you.
One more. One, two, three. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks,
Lee.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I
really appreciate
it. Thank you. We'll be talking to you soon. And are you talking? You're working with Dick Loper?
Yeah.
Talk to him about the flip map?
Yeah.
Because I think he's going to try to pull together a meeting later this week.
Thank you very much.
Cards in case
yeah,
you
perfect. Thank you very much.
Need something?
Representative
some or change. Nice to meet all of you.
Nice to meet you.
Don't hesitate to call me.
We'll take a brief break.
Gentlemen, done. Everything is still done.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, but necessary change. Understanding the atmosphere down there, it's like I need to go somewhere with fewer people.
You guys have a big congressional race going on today.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Price's seat.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
Yeah, I guess you have that funny thing where, like, Louisiana, where